Friday, July 7, 2017. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. I'm Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Each week, I talk to our Capitol muckraker-in-chief, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. Today, I'm recording from an undisclosed location in the shadow of Red Rock Mountain, folks. So I want to apologize right from the get-go with some of the quality of today's show. I've had to do some editing. We're trying to preserve as much bandwidth as we could to try to make this show happen this week. There's so much that's been going on. Hopefully it's not too bad. Thank you for your patience and support. There certainly has been a whole lot of good stuff going on this week. The 4th of July does not give us a break from the degradation of our democracy. Ted Cruz gets Trump's embrace for a heartless healthcare plan. The Washington Post reports that a new analysis from the right-wing American Enterprise Institute shows that the White House gender pay gap has more than tripled. That's right, tripled in the first 6 months of Trump rule. Trump Organization turns to social media and the Justice Department to increase attacks on the media. Rachel Maddow issues warning to journalists after exposing forged secret documents. Trump has trouble finding a hotel room in Hamburg as G20 protests explode ahead of the beginning of today's summit. Trump builds alliances with global strongmen. Zombies march in Hamburg streets. And California Governor Jerry Brown announces climate summit next year in San Francisco. Here's mud in your eye, Donnie. Right-wing militia wannabe shoots himself at Gettysburg. He was there to defend dead Confederate soldiers against the threat of fake Antifa action. Pennsylvania faces yet another credit downgrade as fake budget still in search of funding. PA's Republican House Majority Leader Dave Reed saying Thursday there's still no agreement. House is in session today and Senate will be in session tomorrow. So we'll see if they ever get there on that budget deal. There's always the Chris Christie solution, of course. Shut down the government and get primo beach space for you and your family. Harrisburg police lobbying city council for $65,000. Yeah, it's because they want to militarize their operations. Republican Congressman Lloyd Smucker from Lancaster gets his first challenger for 2018. Bring the class and pipeline war, folks. As Governor Wolf doubles down on fossil fuels and Trump walks away from the Paris Agreement, global automakers are making big moves to go electric. Volvo just announced that it will be all electric or hybrid beginning in 2019. France announces it will end sales of gas or diesel cars by 2040. And Norway's already ahead of the game entirely. With already 22% of the market being electric cars, Norway will ban non-electric or hybrid cars by 2025. And today, Friday, July 7th, Tesla rolls out the much-anticipated Model 3. And in today's last call, we'll sort out the biggest story of the summer. Are babies being secretly sent to Mars to become slaves? Yes, NASA actually had to weigh in on this one. Insert facepalm here. RoboCop is real in Dubai. And Raging Chicken takes a step towards Houston for its first annual SpaceCom this coming December. I'm not kidding, folks. It's for real. We'll also take a little bit of look at PA gubernatorial hopeful Paul Mango as he gets spiritual in the Capitol. Want to remind everybody to tune in to the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. You can stream the show live at freespeech.org, or you can tune in on the Dish Network, DirecTV, or you can use the Free Speech TV app on Roku. If you missed the show, no worries. Go to ricksmithshow.com and click on the Free Speech TV icon on the sidebar, and you can listen to the show at your leisure. I want to remind you what keeps us going. Our members like you, or some of you at least. But, you know, look, frankly, we need you to keep Pull No Punches Progressive Media going strong. Become a member of Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to RagingChickenPress.org and look for the Support and Membership tab. Click Become a Member and you're on your way. Not ready to become a member? Not a problem. You can make a one-time donation by clicking Donate. Look, we need you, the progressive community, to help us deepen Pull No Punches progressive media that will hold power accountable. And we got a special announcement this week. Welcome aboard to Justin Schweitzer, who will be the first Raging Chicken Student Fellow. Justin is a student at Kutztown University and has done great work there with a student newspaper. And he'll be coming aboard to learn the ropes of progressive activist media. You may have seen his article on Bill McKibben's visit to Northampton Community College earlier this year. It was great stuff. And then later today, you'll be able to check out his latest piece on Pat Toomey's town hall at ABC 27 Studios Wednesday night. So that's it, folks. I'm going to take a little bit of a break here. Sean and I recorded the show separately because we were having some issues with the bandwidth and audio. So we did the pre-record for this, or not the pre-record. I'm recording this as a separate file. So I'm going to take a little break, come back in just a second, and we'll launch right into this week's Out the Coop podcast. Be right back. Yes, yes, folks. Greetings from the shadows of Red Rock Mountain. As I said in the intro there, our quality might be a little off today, but Sean and I are going to give it the good old college try, give it the gusto, and attempt to make this work. So, Sean, man, happy 4th of July week, I guess.
Yeah, you know, this is actually a fun week. You know, we had a little behind the scenes type of thing. We pretty much had our plans for this podcast filled out by Sunday night, Monday morning.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, seriously, it's like, and I think that I said this to Sean is, Sean basically emailed me messaged me on Sunday saying, hey, you want to get a page up so we can start putting some things in? And usually we start that, I don't know, Tuesday or Wednesday for the Friday's podcast. But so much is going on that we just started talking about it. Exactly. So I think that we're going to have to start doing this now. And I think that was actually a good call because, so much happens every single week. I think that also allows us to kind of sort things out a little bit. One of the things that was nuts, I mean, that kind of got this started out was, again, we see the ramping up of the war on the media this week in ways that, I don't know, it's kind of pushes new boundaries.
Yeah. It's definitely not normal, the president tweeting out him doing a Stone Cold Stunner on the fake CNN type of thing, and what really amazes me is how the messaging around this is. Some of my friends are like, it's just a social media thing, nothing to worry about here. But it's also, this is extremist rhetoric at this point. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he's turning open season on the media.
Well, just to make sure that everybody knows what we're talking about. I mean, there was this scene from, I don't know if it was the 90s or something like this, where Trump's a big wrestling guy, right? And there was this, right, where he basically takes McMahon, who was the head of WWE wrestling, and grabs him on the side of the ring, right in the middle of the thing, and throws him down on the ground and gets him on and kind of punches the guy. And somebody had done a kind of a mashup of this. And then instead of it being McMahon, it's actually like the CNN logo on the guy's head. So it's basically Trump knocking CNN down and punching CNN silly on the floor. And then Trump, of course, tweets it out.
Yeah, he retweets it. And the person he retweeted from turns out to be a white nationalist. How shocking.
How shocking is that? Yeah, because Trump has no ties to white nationalism, of course.
No, not like Steve Bannon's in the White House.
No, but, I think the way that you started talking about this, Sean, I think is important because, of course, if you just see this thing as by itself, outside of any context, just a little mashup. What's the big deal? It's a tweet, right? But, when Trump retweeted it out, what he did, he used the hashtag hashtag fraud news CNN, right? So basically you've got, you know, calling saying, this is what I want you to see, fraud news CNN, him thinking it's funny, whatever it might be. And it might be true that, you know, the person, you know, the middle-class person that is sitting there and who's got all their kind of professional credentials together looks at this and says, oh, whatever. But this is the kind of stuff that helps to fuel the flames on the right and create and kind of basically justify extremism. I mean, and if you couple that with, you got that mashup coming out, and the same week, we basically see that Trump, you know, Trump has had this longstanding feud with CNN, right? This back and forth. Of course, CNN, you know, basically gave him all the coverage he could possibly ever want in the lead up to the election, but that's a whole other story. But right this past week, he also, because reported in New York Magazine, right, that Trump to actually use the Justice Department to intervene with a potential merger with CNN and AT&T, right? Or actually, or the it's not AT. What am I saying? Not CNN, but
Time Warner,
Turner Broadcast. Yeah, Time Warner. I'm sorry, Time Warner and AT&T merger. So, in other words, he's saying, okay, if CNN is not gonna get itself together, you know, we might have to look more closely at this merger. Basically saying to the people at AT&T and Time Warner, you might want to bring your news people under wraps and get them back in line if you expect your merger to go through. So now, you know, it's one thing to say that publicly as a president of the United States. It's another thing to basically saying, okay, I'm willing to devote the resources of the federal government to suppress news coverage. And that is frightening.
Yeah, no, that's beyond frightening at this point. I mean, what else is there to say about it? I mean, it's what we've been talking about for the past year now. Like, you know what I mean? Like, this isn't like the first time Trump is going after someone in the media. You know, his bodyguards body slammed someone before he became the official nominee. He made fun of the New York Times reporter for having a disability. You know, this is a continuation of that process.
No, that's absolutely right. And then, you know, last night, we were back and forth about this last night, but the Rachel Maddow show last night, I thought was incredibly sobering and if not chilling report. You know, she called it a kind of like an inside out scoop or something like this. But basically, look, giving the heads up to people in the media, right, and basically to newsrooms everywhere, because they have like basically a comment line, and you know, if you got a tip for the Rachel Maddow show, it's the senditorachel.com, right, page. You could contact them, you could send them documents. She said we get a bunch of documents, but then they got this one document that was reportedly super secret document, like you know, top secret document, super classified, that was a bombshell. Right, that was actually going to kind of name an American that was directly involved with collusion with Russia. It looked to be a perfectly authentic NSA document, I believe it's an NSA document, insider document, and so on. And they sat on it for a while because something just didn't feel right. And as they dug into this, and I encourage people to go check it out, there's a link in the show notes, but check out the report, because basically what happened, they came to the conclusion, her team came to the conclusion that this was a forgery, that somebody is shopping very sophisticated forged documents to news organizations in an attempt, from their call, is to try to discredit those organizations. And she makes a reference back to some of Dan Rather's reporting back during the George W. Bush period, where, you know, he was basically forced off the air for reporting with these documents that turned out to be incorrect documents or false documents. And the result of that was to squash a very important story about George W. Bush. So here you have documents that were sent to Rachel Maddow show, who's been reporting extensively on Russia, like to the point where, you know, it's all you hear sometimes is Russia, Russia, Russia. But still, looks like if they had run that document, that I am sure that there were people waiting in the wings to basically run the smear campaign about how this is a forged document. And so she basically reported on it last night. They couldn't talk about what was in the document. But basically said a heads up to news organizations to watch out for this stuff. That is a really sophisticated attempt to suppress that, you know, who knows where it's coming from and what sector it's coming from. But, you know, now we've got to be on our guards triply. Not only do we have, you know, the threats of direct violence coming from Trump supporters, right, the right wing and kind of neo-fascist folks, but you also got some sophisticated operators who are attempting to go after the media in ways that, you know, could basically could end careers.
Yeah. And this is a really good, you know, like example. I also look at it like this. This is us doing our due diligence as a media outlet, you know, checking everything, letting everything be known, and then, you know, telling people, no, there's still there. We still operate in this way. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we're not going to, if you give us a document, we're just not going to go publish it. Like, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Unless you could tell like what the document is, like right off the bat, like, oh, here's a memo from a gas company that we published online a few years ago supporting this bill. Yes. Okay. You don't have to go through that type of like those degrees of authentication, but you know, the system worked here.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, very careful due diligence. So on the one hand, you know, people, you know, especially people on the left, like people on the left, you know, you all know, if you're listening to this podcast and you're on the left, you know, this is that we spend most of our time infighting anyways. You know, healthy discussion and kind of, you know, dismissal of Rachel Maddow's work because of, you know, her incessant focus on Russia, which, you know, again, I'll fully admit gets incredibly problematic. But the fact that she laid bare their process, just like you said, is really important. Say, this is the kind of, this is what it looks like to actually do your due diligence as a journalist, especially when you're dealing with very important stuff. Now, you know, again, we've talked about this, you know, over the past weeks about, you know, this both-siderism stuff. And, you know, this certainly is not the case on the right, right? You take Fox News, right, as point of comparison and the kind of blatant lies that they're willing to shop as opposed to this kind of careful journalism that was there. But, you know, it just scared, you know, not scared me. Scared is the wrong word. But, man, it just made me very, very nervous to see that we're seeing that level of kind of operation happening at the same time that we're seeing, like, the calls for, you know, beating up reporters, right, or beating up the media on the other hand. You put those two things together, and, man, you're talking about a really chilling, potentially chilling climate.
Yeah.
So, you know, and all the more reason, you know, I've been, you know, it's been interesting to see that happen as that, you know, today, of course, is the beginning of the G20 summit over in Hamburg, Germany. And ahead of this week, we saw all sorts of protests. And so I've been reading a lot of the kind of international coverage on this. And we should say, even the stuff about, we reported on last week about, you know, the stuff in Gettysburg, about the Antifa fraud stuff in Gettysburg. The BBC was actually one of the first news organizations to kind of really question the legitimacy of some of the claims being made on the right. And the second, you know, seeing some of the international reporting, comparing it to the U.S. reporting on what's happening at the G20 now has been interesting. My personal favorite, though, before we get, you know, anything serious on it is, you know, did you see that Trump actually, they had trouble finding a hotel room for the summit?
Wait, there was no Trump Tower out there?
There was, turns out he was like, well, what do you mean? There's no Trump Tower in Hamburg. There's a river and there's water here and it's a big city. And
there's going to be one now, damn it.
So apparently, like, it's like in the end, the German government basically had to, like, okay, we'll find you a room, you know, kind of thing. Because they basically, you know, again, this shows you just the basic stuff about governing. They don't have people that, you know, make reservations ahead of time. Yeah, they don't know, you know, I mean, calling even to make sure you got your reservations taken care of.
I'm the president of the United States, damn it. I don't need to make reservations.
What do you mean I have to make a reservation? I never had to make a reservation in my life. I usually just go stay in my hotels, but... that's crazy. I mean, that's absolutely nuts. So, you know, we saw in the lead up to the G20, major clashes yesterday, major clashes in the streets of Hamburg from, you know, some radical protesters. They had the kind of welcome to hell protest in the streets, blockading stuff, attempting to basically surround the areas that where the G20 summit is being held. And frankly, you know, I was reminded a lot of some of the, you know, the protests I was involved in 1999 and 2000, 2001, so on, the global justice stuff, where you had massive crowds of people basically saying no to they, you know, this, you know, your G20, your richest 20 nations, richest 20 nations in the world, you don't get to determine our future, right? And that's really part of the message. But, you know, it looks like it's going to be, you know, something else. And at the same time, you had some of the violent clashes that took place in the streets of Hamburg. You also had this amazing thing called a zombie march. It was really interesting. If you check out the links in the show notes to the zombie march, where people, you know, this artist group basically collective got together and dressed up in these, like, all covered with gray soot or something like this, and they walked through zombies, and they eventually kind of, you know, tore off their clothes to reveal colorful clothes underneath, basically saying that no, you need to get involved with the political process. You cannot walk through this and be zombies in this. So there we have it. I mean, this is the head of the G20. Today, Trump is supposedly meeting with Putin. Yesterday, he looks to, and this is actually supported by Steve Bannon. Bannon released a video basically saying that, yeah, we need to build alliances with the right-wing strongmen across the world. And Trump was there getting support from the people in Poland, the new right-wing government in Poland, at a march where it was pretty frightening to see in Warsaw, thousands of people. Yes, many of them were bussed in, but thousands of people basically, you know, yelling Trump, 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 Trump in Poland. So a very weird place in the world right now, Sean.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah, but you know, so we're, you know, next week we'll take some close watch on G20. After we see kind of what's come out of a little bit, we'll spend some time a little bit talking about G20 next week. But a couple things just want to kind of say about it and kind of close it out. It's like, one, it's really interesting that Jerry Brown, governor of California, was out there at G20, and basically he's like thumbing the nose at Trump, right? Basically, here's mud in your eye, buddy. Basically saying, attention to that crazy guy over there, Trump. Right. We are going to, California is going to hold a global climate summit in San Francisco next year. And basically, you know, we're going to do it. Trump's not going to do it. Don't pay attention to him. I'm the guy that you want to do business with, because this guy is doesn't want to deal with it.
And you know what? So, this is where I think we as Pennsylvanians, right, should pressure Governor Wolf to get involved with this.
Yeah.
This climate summit, you know, Pennsylvania is responsible for 1% of the world's climate emissions.
That's nuts.
Like, put that in perspective, you know, that's pretty high up there. You know, we are responsible for 1% of the world's climate emissions. And, you know, we have a governor that really still was palling around with the gas industry.
Absolutely. You know, today's an interesting day for this, right? Because you've got, I agree with you 100%. Wolf needs to kind of get on board. He should be working more with Jerry Brown as opposed to the gas industry. I mean, let's look at today. Today, Tesla is releasing its Tesla Model 3, right? Which basically will basically be priced at around $1,000, right? Into the market. And if you look at current tax credits, right, around $10,000, that would bring it down to almost $25,000. It makes it a competitive car, right? It's no longer just for, you know, the luxury class stuff. Now you're getting at the level of being a competitive car, and that's being released today ahead of schedule. The same week, you've got, say, for example, Volvo just announced, right, that by 2019, in 2 years, right, all of their cars, right, will either be electric or hybrid, you know, in 2 years, 2019, electric or hybrid. And France just announced that it's going to end sales of all gas or diesel cars by 2040, right? They join Norway, who's banning non-electric or hybrid cars by 2025, right? So, I mean, I don't see, you know, Tom Wolf is basically looking like the guy from yesteryear here. by refusing to actually get on board with kind of more like alternative energy and the future of this planet, instead going back with the dirty energy and fossil fuels or really, really short-term thinking. And I think that all that's kind of coming together around the G20 summit kind of is important. But, you know, we'll see. I mean, Wolf has not exactly been responsive when it comes to, taking his like hand out of the gas industry coffers.
And you know, one of the things that we've published a lot of on run up to the gubernatorial election was Steve Horn's reporting on who Katie McGinty was, right? And if you like dig into the news the past couple of days, the person Mark Penn, did you see that op-ed that he wrote? Basically, America has to move back to the center. The Democrats have to move back to the right, because the left, all the left will like just drive the party to insanity. You saw that yesterday?
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. So that guy, Mark Penn, is head of the of this firm, SDK Knickerhopper, Knickerlooper, or whatever. That is the same firm that McGinty worked at as a lobbyist representing oil and gas interests. Just if you want to go tie that into the national Clinton apparatus.
There it is right there, right? I mean, I'm, you know, we don't have our video up today, so you can't see me shaking my head in disgust right now.
Just dig into like the consultants, you know, this guy, Mark Penn is making millions promoting right-wing agendas.
Yep. Yep.
And then he's telling the Democrats to go back to the right because you're going to hurt my bottom line.
Yeah. Yeah. That's going to be very helpful to the planet and for the rest of us, you know. Pretty nuts. But so just, you know, for those folks who always get upset with us that we are too hard on good Tom Wolf, we do have some positive things to report for this week of from Tom Wolf when it comes to national attempts to suppress the vote in PA, at least.
Yeah. The governor, Chris Kobach, whatever his name is, from Oklahoma and Nebraska, some state out there, is running Trump's voter fraud commission, you know, basically trying to find out how 3 million people voted illegally in the election, giving Hillary Clinton the popular vote victory. So he was asking for all the records of all the voters in all the states to compile this massive database. And Wolf and 43 other states said no.
We're not giving you the data.
Yeah. Imagine how vast that is. This is something that should be people should be talking about.
Absolutely. Well, I don't know if you heard the latest on this too.
This is a national registry of all registered voters.
Exactly.
What did Republicans say in the past about registries, you know, with gun registries and stuff like that? We can't have that, but, you know, we got to have voter registry to see who's voting.
The information that they want, let's be clear, they want names, full names, including middle names, if when available. They want the last four digits of your social security number. They want your party registration and voting habits. They want, basically everything that is kept on file anywhere. They want to consolidate that in a national level. And he's out in Kansas, actually. And was interesting about this too as well, because he basically runs, you know, the he's the Secretary of State of Kansas. He's responsible for their election stuff, and he actually applied with his own order, right, because of Kansas law, right, which is what just spins my head. But the way that they're trying to kind of deal with this, some of the pushback on it, because people were asking questions like, well, who's going to have access to this? And Kobach's first response was like, well, we're going to make it available to the public. And we're like, are you kidding me? And then he walked that back a little bit and said, well, maybe not the public, will be kept safe. And then it turns out their latest is that, no, they plan on keeping it on White House servers. You're putting a national database, voter database, with political affiliations and all the information they need about where to find you and how to find you into the direct hands of the Trump I mean, I don't know how that does not set off alarm bells on these right wing folks. I mean, how you warp your worldview like to such a degree that you don't like, that's not sending fireworks off in your head about like, you know, this is what fascists do. This is like George Orwell's 1984. That is so disturbing. And I thank God that Wolf said, no, we're not going to comply with this. Right. We'll see how long that holds. Because you know, this is dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah. It really is, you know, and you know, this and the Jerry Brown, the climate summit, you know, goes back to that need of, we have to start thinking, the left has to start thinking across the country in power politics, you know, and doing these type of agendas. Like, you know what, we're going to run unilateral climate change agreements. You know, we're going to run unilateral regulations or taxes on stuff like this, or free college higher education, just to split that divide. And, you know, campaign on these ideas.
Absolutely. And they have to be willing to pull the trigger on it, right? I mean, you know, there's been some.
This is the type of stuff that the left needs to do if they're going to win.
Absolutely. And, you know, again, we talked a little bit about this before, like in California, where they were proposing single payer stuff. And then now it looks a little bit sketchy that there is some politics that are being played on this, like on the left, right? And really having to kind of be frank with voters about what it would take to actually bring single payer to California. It's not as easy as, you know, just putting a referendum out there and stuff like that and start because of some of those things in California law, and the way that their funding formulas are all kind of put up. But it has to say, okay, look, if you really want single payer, which I think is going to what we need, right, in a place like California or in the United States, for example, then a place like California and New York and some of the other large states, more progressive leaning states, are going to have to really dig in and think about how do you make that happen. That you know, the climate summit is great. And we couple that with actual policy and political activation. I mean, that's the only way we win this, I think.
Yeah.
So crazy. So, yeah. So, I mean, it's been a pretty crazy week. And so good on Tom Wolf for that. We wish he'd, hop on board the, Jerry Brown, wagon there on the climate stuff and, you know, basically distance himself a little bit from the gas industry, but you know, we'll keep on watching that. So I don't know. Got a lot to watch this weekend. It's not going to be a calm one, even after the 4th of July break. Lots going on, lots of moving parts. We still got healthcare to worry about, whether or not they're going to be able to get that through. All the reporting is at the national level that there's still not an agreement about whether or not the Senate is going to pass this repeal and replace and basically throw a whole bunch of people off healthcare. We see the G20 summit, which promises to dominate some of the headlines as Trump makes a fool of himself globally. And then we'll see what happens on the ground with the activism here. So lots of moving parts this weekend, Sean.
Yeah, definitely.
Pretty crazy. All right, we're going to take a break. And we come back from the break. We're going to get into, we'll start off with our good friend, our next door neighbor there, Chris Christie, who had himself a wonderful 4th of July. You know, and it gives us some clues, basically, if you really want to have a good family weekend, you know, this is one way to do that. So as a reminder, you know, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. The way that you can help out our reporting, this podcast, investigative work, commentary, all the initiatives that we're doing is become a member of Raging Chicken Press. You become a member by going to ragingchickenpress.org, click on the support and membership tab, and you'll be on your way. You become a member for as little as $5 a month, or you can give us a one-time donation there. Thank you for all the support over these years, and we're looking forward to digging even more, and we're going to need it in the fights ahead. We'll be back right after this break. See you in a minute.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two.
On
this day in labor history, the year was 1894. That was the day thousands of Pullman strikers confronted state militia forces at the Grand Trunk Railroad crossing in Chicago. The strike began on May 11th after George Pullman slashed wages but refused to lower rents in his company town. In late June, Eugene V. Debs and the American Railway Union called for a national boycott of all Pullman cars. The boycott spread to 27 states, involving more than 150,000 workers. Attorney General Richard Olney issued an injunction declaring the strike illegal on July 2nd. The injunction failed to break the strike, but it did prevent union leaders from communicating with strikers. The next day, President Cleveland ordered troops into Chicago rail yards to crush the strike. Workers were furious. They flooded the yards, stopping trains, smashing switches, and barricading themselves with baggage cars. Fighting continued for several days as angry strikers stormed rail yards and overturned empty freight cars. Thousands of workers impacted by the Depression joined in, including those stranded in the city after the Columbian Exposition. Two strikers were shot dead on the Illinois Central Railroad on July 6th. Workers responded by setting fire to hundreds of rail cars. Now, on this day, the militia attempted to run a work train to clear the rail yard at 49th and Loomis. Thousands followed the train, showering it with bricks and stones. The troops returned gunfire, killing at least four and injuring dozens. Chicago unions soon voted in favor of a citywide sympathy strike, but the railroads quickly hired replacement labor. Federal troops and state militia cleared the railway for business. Maine strike leaders were arrested. By the beginning of August, Pullman rehired only those strikers who agreed to never join a union.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
So, Sean, you know, I'm in the mountains, but I think maybe the place to be over this past holiday weekend was the beach, man, because it looks like the beaches weren't crowded at all, especially down on the Jersey Shore.
No, but I heard they found a whale on the beach.
A beached whale?
Here we go. Going right into the jokes about Christy.
Way to start it. Yeah, you know, it's a holiday week, everybody. So,
man, talk about optics there. That was pretty crazy.
It was pretty crazy. I mean, this is after, of course, government shutdown in New Jersey, where, you know, thousands and thousands of people were turned away from the shore because Chris Christie basically wants to fundamentally transform the state's healthcare plans. And Democrats are having none of it. So, you know, Christie decides to shut everything down, but that doesn't apply to him, which seems to be pretty much his MO.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what it is. And it was actually like reading into the situation with Christie and, you know, had to support Democrats. There's this one lone, the House Speaker in New Jersey is the one standing up against this plan. And it's just because some of those, you know, good old fashioned corrupt New Jersey political alliances down in southern and central Jersey.
I mean, New Jersey has no shortage of corruption, and that goes for both parties down there. You know, a friend of mine who's from New Jersey, and she says, you know, she actually became a Republican. I mean, this is a feminist and stuff. She became a Republican when she was younger. Precisely, you know, her parents were the diehard Democrats. But there had been so much corruption in the Democratic Party in New Jersey that she actually became a Republican initially simply to get away from that kind of corruption. But, you know, corruption knows no party in New Jersey.
No, it does not.
So, man, you know, I don't want to talk too much about this today, especially because I know my audio and my connection is not the best. And this is the kind of thing that I could about, and if I do that, what's going to happen is I'm going to put Sean asleep, and then everybody is going to be left with me sounding like I'm in some kind of fishbowl or something. So, but I think we have to talk a little bit about the PA budget. I mean, if you recall last week, while we were recording our podcast, the legislature was actually working on finalizing the deal, and they finalized a deal well, at least a spending plan as part of a budget, right? So they were able to, you know, say hurrah, and Mike Stack had his little party for all the senators, and they're basically saying, you know, hey, look, we passed a budget on time. But of course, they only passed one side of that budget, and that was the spending plan. And they said that they were going to work through the weekend and this week in order to figure out the revenue side. Well, here we are a week later. According to Dave Reed, you know, the majority leader there, Dave Reed, basically the Republican majority leader, Dave Reed, saying that, look, they're, you know, no closer to reaching an agreement. So if this does not have action, if they do not come up to a spending plan, the budget is sitting on the governor's desk, and the governor is, he has three options. One, he can sign it, veto it, or three, he could not sign it and just let it come into law. And if you remember, that's what happened last time, because the Wolf refused to sign the bill because there was no adequate spending plan. And this is actually coming back to haunt them this year.
Yeah. No, if I was Wolf, I think like not signing it, and you know, you're in an election year now, not signing this bill, letting it become law, and then just using that as an excuse to go after them might be a good political ploy.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that, you know, if I
like
think
use look, to beat them over the head with it.
I mean, I think that that Wolf is in the position where he's like, he's made himself. This is one thing he's done very well, I think. He's made it clear ever since he took over the, you know, ever since he was elected, he made it clear that he's not going to sign a budget that's not responsible. And so, again, he didn't want to, you know, get into this, to veto the budget and end up this big a political mess. So he basically, you know, like hang this over their head and say, okay, this is what you want. I can't condone this behavior, but we're going to let it, you know, this is what you guys want. And sure enough, if you remember last time around, the S&P has basically not been looking very highly. Standard & Poor's has not been looking very highly on Pennsylvania. And they downgraded Pennsylvania's credit rating to a double A minus last time around. And now Standard & Poor's, S&P, is basically saying, look, if you do this again, we are going to downgrade Pennsylvania's credit again. And this is what they said. They said, quote, while it is not uncommon for states to have periodic structural imbalance, Pennsylvania's chronic misalignment and eroding general fund position, particularly during a period of economic growth, demonstrate a pattern of financial mismanagement, S&P said in a statement. And if legislators enact a budget that relies on what we view as optimistic assumptions or one-time sources, we would likely lower the rating. So this is where we sit right now. We're on the verge of having Pennsylvania's credit rating going down again, which means there'll be more interest and more burden shifted to the taxpayers, and likely more austerity coming from a Republican legislature.
Yeah, I mean, they are pushing us to failed state status at this point. Like the stuff that's been happening over in with Illinois, they have a budget at least this time, but Illinois is like a failed state. This is where they're pushing Pennsylvania to become.
Yep, and they're going right up to the precipice, and you know, it seems like they've got their fingers in their ears, their head in the ground. They're not listening to anything. We know that what Wolf has been urging for a long time now, we need basically a tax on the drillers. We need to close the Delaware loophole that allows corporations to hide all its all their assets and all their earnings over in Delaware and not pay taxes. Right. And then this kind of rampant, you know, tax giveaways to the richest among richest Pennsylvanians. That stuff has to stop until you actually address the revenue question about how we actually raise funds, to basically provide for the Commonwealth. We're going to see more hurt headed our way unless this, turns around. But, you know, I don't know, Sean. Dave Reed did not seem too optimistic about a solution before Monday.
Yeah, and knowing the people in the Republican caucus, it's Reed's job, it's Terzai's job of herding cats, and I think that's what's happening at this point. I think that they're trying to get a budget done, but they can't hurt the people in their caucus, like the Metcalfs and the crazies.
Yep. I mean, it's like the mirror image. I mean, this is like amateur hour for what we see happening in, like, at the national level, with the Republicans at the national level. We look at what's happening with healthcare in D.C., that McConnell can't herd his cats to get this healthcare bill passed in the Senate, which is actually good for most people here. I mean, this is like the opposite version. That would be good for everybody if this healthcare bill does not get passed in the Senate. But, you know, the kind of fractional extremism that the Republicans have been cultivating at the state and national level is coming back to haunt their own party. So now we get these one party states that are kind of just characterized by infighting, and they're willing to take the rest of us down with them.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Well, you know, given that it's budget season, we see that, you know, the stuff happening all over. It's not just Pennsylvania. And I thought it was interesting, Sean, you had a story that was out this week that the budget hearings, or at least requests, in the Harrisburg City Council got pretty interesting this week.
Yeah. So a couple weeks ago, Harrisburg Police Department submitted a $65,000 budget allocation request to the city for increase in protective gear. Have you ever heard of protective gear?
Like what baseball players wear?
Yeah, something sort of like that. And, you know, comes with shin guards, has a cut chest plate, a nice shiny black helmet, a shield, riot sticks, and other things. Yeah.
I always played baseball, but I was a catcher.
Oh, you were. So you know what we're talking about then.
I do, except you know what? They didn't give me a shield and a nightstick. I would have been far more successful if I had a shield and a nightstick behind the plate.
Yeah. So basically this is what the city council, city police department's doing. In wake of recent protests, especially the Antifa protest that's been going on here in Harrisburg. It's been a bit of a fashion of as of late. The city wants to get 30 new riot shields, riot gear, head-to-toe riot gear, and the equipment that goes with it, the shield and the sticks. And according to the police department, their gear is outdated by 20 years, which is older. But really, this is coming down to a fight of semantics. You know, the fact is, close to a third of your police department is going to have access to riot gear. And they're saying that this is protective gear that will de-escalate situations because officers won't be in fear of their lives when they're using this gear.
Man, it's militarize Harrisburg. Is that right?
Yeah. The, you know, a lot of people in the community see this as a push for militarization. But a lot of people are also like on the side of the police right now. It seems like they're trying to ride this blue wave into getting this type of gear.
Yeah, this stuff is dangerous. I mean, I watched the video that you posted of the request where you have the kind of Harrisburg Police Department walking into the room, the city council room, with the riot helmets, shields, and then placing them on the tables and saying, this is the equipment that we're requesting. And basically the argument being made was, you know, look, we're just having to make sure that we protect our members. That's part of what we need to do. We need to make sure that they're safe. And that's a pretty persuasive argument. You're saying, look, of course you want police officers to be safe. You don't want them to be vulnerable and so on. However, that ignores the wider context. I mean, what we've seen is that this increase, this kind of military of the police in cities across the United States is actually leading to kind of more violence against civilians, right? I mean, the idea is that once you dress up like a soldier, you start to behave more like a soldier.
Yeah, it's crowd psychology at its most basic.
Man, so where does that stand right now?
So what ended up happening was the vote got... They were supposed to vote on like last night with all the other budget stuff, but they all decided to push it back 6 weeks until they come back from their recess. So the Harrisburg City Council is going to be out of session for the next 6 weeks, and they've effectively pushed the vote back for 2 months at this point.
Happens here, and I think it's going to be interesting to see what be in the community. Is that are we going to, you know, what's the arc? How are the forward, what's going to be the concerns that are going to be expressed, you know, among people? Because, you know, I know that this has been one of the highlights, what, like, you know, folks like organizations like Black Lives Matter, kind of criminal or not criminal reform movements and things like this have really, you know, highlighted this idea that, you know, we need to stop militarizing our police and get back to more of community policing and so on. This, of course, got, you know, thrown into the national spotlight when we found out that, you know, even under the Obama administration and before that, they were, you know, happy to send out surplus military gear, you know, to police departments at request. So that's where we started seeing more armored vehicles and, you know, the militarization of our police force. There was that they started talking about in that video was how, yeah, you know, maybe the police force is a paramilitarization. That was a little bit haunting.
Yeah, that part was pretty pretty odd, pretty striking. You know, like, are they structured like a military? Yes. And do they use that sometimes? Yes. But the that was a haunting part, but also that Orwellian style language behind it, saying that this is not riot gear, this is protective gear, and protective gear de-escalates situations because a police officer will not be in fear of their life. They made many sports analogies to it. Would you let your son play football without any pads and helmets? Then why would you let us not do that? You know, I think you saw at one point the frustration boil over in the crowd when one of the attendants, you know, just like smacked herself across the face with the notebook she had after, you know, listening to the police captain, Derek Moody, say, would you let a firefighter go into a building without a breathing apparatus? Like, this was their argument in front of City Hall.
And, like, you know, again, I saw that moment too as well. She smacks herself on the forehead with the notebook and she like raises her arms in the air, kind of like,
WTF?
Is this for real? And yes, it was for real. But, you know, Sean, you know, the Harrisburg Police Department have themselves a point. I mean, after all, I mean, you've got basically, you know, these people playing war games down there in Gettysburg. And, you know, these patriots, they can't even seem to keep their gun in the holster. One guy actually shot himself
with a revolver in his hip. Wonder how that happens. But no.
Well, I think it starts with a hoax, right?
Well, yeah, it does. You know, the Antifa people, you know, have been getting a lot of attention of late. And, you know, supposedly these mythical creatures known as Antifa were going to travel into the heart of conservative Pennsylvania and burn Confederate flags at Confederate gravesites. Man, who would, like, can you think of anything better than that?
Well, especially since no Confederates are actually buried at Gettysburg, that should have been people's first clue.
I thought they were buried there. The graves just aren't marked.
Or the graves aren't marked, excuse me.
Yeah, so, you know, so it didn't divide the dead there. Like, you know what I mean? It didn't, like, but, yeah, so, and did you see it, like, close to, like, 300 militia members showed up?
Yeah, I saw. You had militia folks, you had Klan people. The right wing was going absolutely crazy about this and trying to urge people for some sort of kind of reenactment of a civil war in Gettysburg. Except it was basically a whole kind of, you know, like good versus evil battle being fought out in the imaginations of the right.
Literally, you know, this event, you know, this hoax actually leads back to Harrisburg. You know, remember that Harrisburg 100 blog we've been talking about in the past?
Yeah, we talked about this last week, that this Harrisburg 100 was getting this play basically nationwide for basically alerting people, quote unquote, to what was going to happen with this Antifa attempt to desecrate stuff in Gettysburg. And it looks like this guy is at the center of the hoax.
Yeah, and BuzzFeed ran a great article pointing everything back to him. And then what also happened, he is now claiming victory.
Remember last week, that's exactly what I said was going to happen, is that, you know, basically they look at things as win-win. So either that you hype this up on the right, and then therefore, like Antifa or people on the left go there to protest the racists, and then it leads to a confrontation, or like nobody from the left or nobody from Antifa shows up, and then the right wing claims victory, scaring away Antifa protesters, which apparently is what has happened.
Yeah. And you know, this incident a lot more brings into question who's more dangerous or who's more violent. You know, I think we have to, like, when we talk about Antifa, you want to make the argument for violence. I think we talk about to which degree that they are violent. You know, maybe a street fight or destroying a window somewhere or turning over a trash can. Yes, that might be considered violent in your view, but showing up to a protest to confront people in an open confrontation with weapons on you is way more violent than that. Like, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. I think that's a really good.
You know, like, what has there ever been an Antifa member that blew up a government building, like Timothy McVeigh? You know, has there ever been an Antifa member to, run it? Yeah, like blow up a Planned Parenthood clinic because he disagreed with them, or shoot up a gay nightclub? You know, no, or shoot up a church in South Carolina. No, they might look like good, like violent criminals on TV, like the Russians do. But, you know, most of the violence in this country is stemming from these white nationalists.
I think that, you know, I mean, look, the U.S. has had its share of more extreme kind of actions on the left too as well. I mean, if you go back to like the 1960s with like the Weather Underground, for example, were a kind of a radical left organization that did bomb buildings. But that was the 1960s, and we haven't seen any of that in decades, right? Meanwhile, we see on the right people showing up for real, right, with weapons, right, often loaded, and threatening violence with
weapons.
Or
stabbing someone on a train, stabbing three people and killing two on a train.
Right, and killing, right. I mean, these people have shown themselves willing to kill, right? Let's recall that this exists within, you know, a history of white nationalism, kind of like, you know, racist, white racism, right? White supremacy in the United States. Actually, it spent decades like stringing African Americans up, right? I mean, we're talking about systematic violence on the right, which has, you know, barely subsided, right, in the history of the United States. So let's, you know, these things, I think you're right to draw attention to this. This is not a case of like, look, both sides do it. We have to be able to make the distinctions between the kind of violence that we're seeing, right? Number one. And number two, then we can start talking about, and we talked about this last week, and I think the like week before too, about, you know, we can talk about whether or not we think it is smart tactically or strategically to engage in the kind of stuff that Antifa does, right? That direct confrontation of racists and things like that. That is a legitimate and I think important conversation to have on the left. Right. But that doesn't mean it, therefore, it's the same as white nationalist extremists showing up with AR-15s and revolvers that don't work properly. Right. I don't know if you saw this in the story. Right. Last week when the BBC report that basically said the guy shows up and accidentally fires off in his pocket and shoots himself in the leg. The police then tried to actually take the bullets out, and thing was so jammed that another bullet went off and went into the ground. Right. And they said, look, the revolver was not even functional, like properly functional. So you got people out there with guns who don't even know how to use them.
That don't even freaking work.
Right. And that is supposed to be the same thing as Antifa protesters showing up to blockade racist extremists. I mean, you know, come on.
Well, you do. You know, there were these three guys in Chicago that threw a bomb into a crowd 150 years ago.
Yeah. Yes,
I mean,
they were
anarchists.
The Haymarket, like whatever.
And there was Sacco, right? And Vanzetti, you know.
And Vanzetti, right. Seriously, that's exactly what these people look to, these moments in history. And, you know, again, if you look at what happened in the Haymarket, you know, the Haymarket, you know, again, this is going way back here, but, you know, that's even contested about who was actually responsible for that bomb that was thrown. I mean, actually, there was a bomb that was thrown. Everybody knows that. But the police just used that as an opportunity to round up political leaders and execute them. So, you know, we don't see, for example, that guy who basically shot something, you know, shot off a weapon accidentally, quote unquote, or that guy that was stabbing the people on the train out in Portland. We didn't see that police use that as an opportunity to round up like hundreds of white nationalists and execute him. One arrested, one guy get health care, right?
Yeah.
Crazy. So, but at least, you know, I thought at least, at the very least, I got a little chuckle out of that one, Sean. Basically people playing war games and pretending to be like something they're not, going out and shooting themselves in the leg. That was great.
Yeah, awesome.
Anyways, before we close out of this segment, one of the things that you brought up the past couple days is that we actually see that Lloyd Smucker out here in Pennsylvania in the Lancaster area is getting his first challenger for Congress.
Yeah. You know, we've seen in a couple of areas, a couple of people have already posted like phenomenal fundraising money, you know, in some of the more moderate districts that people might pick up and win. Democrats can win out here in Lancaster, which is not the most liberal area of the state, you know, central Pennsylvania. A lady named Jess King is running for Congress. And she describes herself as a working class mother. So if you know where that's going to go, like where her campaign's going, it's something to definitely keep an eye on. Her campaign manager is Nick Martin from Lancaster Stands Up and Lancaster Against Pipelines. And you know what? This is going to be a pretty interesting thing out here in Harrisburg, in Lancaster, because this group here, Lancaster Stands Up, has built a large ground game for a grassroots organization.
I mean, I think this is incredible because, of course, Lloyd Smucker, has been in the news and has been one of these guys on the right
Lloyd Smucker is the guy who basically told the Chamber of Commerce, yeah, I have people coming in my office every day and they're from the insurance companies.
Yep.
At a Chamber of Commerce breakfast. So if you need to know anything much more about Lloyd Smucker, that is a good starting point.
Well, I'm telling you, I guess bring the class war and bring the pipeline war. I guess that's what we're up for, man.
Yeah. So this out here in central Pennsylvania is going to be a really fun thing to watch.
Fantastic. You know, and I hope that we're going to see more of this all across the state of Pennsylvania and, of course, across the country. But this is a really good sign. So, you know, put it on your bookmarks, folks. Jess King for Congress, challenging Lloyd Smucker out there. All right. So we're going to take a little break here and then we're going to go to the last call. And, you know, because it doesn't get any more fun than basically getting spiritual in the Capitol with Paul Mango, huh, Sean?
No, it does not.
All right, we're going to come back with a little bit of that and some fun stuff, some cool space news, some cool electric car news and so on. And let's not forget about the space slaves. I will not forget the space slaves. All right, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to Raging Chicken Radio's Out the Coop podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. And today's last call takes us to the Capitol, where we've got a gubernatorial hopeful by the name of Paul Mango getting spiritual in the Capitol, huh, Sean?
Yeah, he's searching for some godly heritage that so might exist in that building.
Hey, I seem to remember another character talking about godly heritage in the Capitol building.
Yes, Rick Saccone.
But, and he seems to be another gubernatorial hopeful on the Republican Party.
Well, no, he's running against Bob Casey.
I'm sorry, senatorial.
Yeah, the other clown car. But so it was really fun. So yesterday I was walking out of the Capitol building with Roxbury and kind of turned around like, you know, what's this lady doing here? It was Lisa Patton. She's, you know, we talked about her before. This lady owns a massive sporting complex, recreational sporting complex out in the West Shore called Twin Ponds. And she was the person that started Trump's first campaign headquarters out here in Pennsylvania. It covered the Harrisburg area. And this lady is very well connected with the local conservative movement. She's definitely trying to get involved in politics after following her for the past few months. And she was the one giving or showing Paul Mango around the Capitol. And they were going on this spiritual tour. How about that?
My God. You know, you sent me a video last night of this is the woman, right? That of her talking about the godly.
No, this is someone else. This is the tour guide lady is Abby something. Abilene's from Healing Tree.
Healing Tree. That's right.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, like, you know, my response when I saw that video from that tour, I mean, again, it's the same kind of godly heritage garbage that we're hearing. But when I saw that video and saw the kinds of things that was coming out of it, cause like Paul Saccone, I'm not Paul Saccone. Is it Paul Saccone?
Rick Saccone.
He's in that video and you got other legislators in the video and I'm thinking, like, I'm listening to what they're doing and I'm like, man, we're all gonna die.
Eichelberger was another one in that video.
Eichelberger, I know, right? The guy who, like, was so kind to
people that we the people that we've been videotaping the past year were in this video. Not surprised at all. You hear someone says, my God will make a seed of a nation. And it just goes right back to Rick Saccone, like, looking up at the rotunda and reading those words off. And, you know, like, really, they misinterpret religious freedom, you know, freedom from persecution, you know, from practicing your religion, to, like, religious supremacy. Like, yep. Like, you know what I mean?
It's
dominionist, evangelical dominionism type of Christianity. And, you know, like, seeing who this lady was, right, giving the tour, and, like, seeing who Paul Mango is and this Lisa Veronica Patton lady from Twin Ponds, this is, like, grifter, evangelical, prosperity gospel bullshit at its highest degree. Like, man. Like these people are not religious by any – there's – close your ears, but there's no fucks given right here with the, right. Like, the religious, this bullshit coming from them. Like, this Lisa Patton lady, there's stories of her in the community basically fat shaming someone who was cutting her hair one day in public. You know, I know so many people who know this lady from being around, where this is just a bullshit face that they're putting on.
Well, you know, and it's nuts, but here you've got Paul Mango, and basically
Paul Mango is, he's positioning himself as the Trump candidate. Like, you have Scott Wagner out there, who, yes, is, like, pandering
to Soprano.
Yeah, you have Soprano out there doing this stuff, but like, Mango is just as dangerous as Wagner, probably more dangerous because he's competent. That's what you have to, like, watch out for.
Well, I think it's telling in Pennsylvania politics right now is that the two leading we'll say the two people who are kind of out there in front wanting to contest Tom Wolf in the gubernatorial election are both competing for who is the most kind of Trump worthy of candidates. I mean,
Mango's campaign manager is Dave Urban from the Trump campaign. So.
Right, the guy who basically engineered the Trump victory in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, that's who's working for Paul Mango. That's who Paul Mango has right now. So, man, that should send up red flags right away.
Yeah, it should be. Well, speaking of red flags, I do want to make sure that we cover this. You know, we haven't had a chance to cover it in the main show. And I just want to make sure that everybody here, because you all know that I'm a bit of a space junkie and sci-fi guy and everything, but we need to really talk about this main story that's been all over the news all week, is that there are secretly sent to Mars to become slaves. Right, Sean?
Yeah. I was... I want my own slave colony on Mars. You know, I want my own sweatshop, damn it. I want my sweatshop mining the galactic ore and then turning it into jewelry and sending it back to space, back to Earth. Like, imagine if I could mine something that has a trillion, like $10 trillion worth of ore on it.
Well, I mean,
you could do it from Mars. They got no like prevailing wage laws up there. There's nothing. You can do whatever you want, pretty much.
I'm telling you, this is so nuts. I mean, look, this would be nuts to begin with, right? That, you know, this has its origins from the Alex Jones show, right? Alex Jones was basically interviewing this guy, Robert David Steele, who basically, you know, like on his show. And of course, the Alex Jones show is on the 118 radio stations nationwide, right? Of course, internet sensation on the right. And this guy claims to be CIA insider, right? Basically says that NASA, this is what he said. Here's quote. "We actually believe that there is a colony on Mars that is populated by children who were kidnapped and sent into space on a 20-year ride," said Steele. "So that once they get to Mars, they have no alternative but to be slaves on the Mars colony." And then they claim, well, we don't see anybody on the Mars and on Mars. And he says, well, that's because they shut off the probes every time they pass over the colony.
Oh, really?
it's like, this is actually what this guy was saying, right? And okay, look, this would be funny and shows you like how crazy these people are to begin with. But the fact is, the story got so much traction, right, that NASA actually had to comment on it.
Sort right? of so like they Antifa burning Confederate flags at Gettysburg.
Exactly. I mean, this blew my mind, right? That, you know, so the Daily Beast ran this great story on it, and NASA basically said, you know, you could imagine the spokesperson from NASA kind of like, no, there is no colony on Mars.
We do not have a space colony on Mars, okay?
There are no humans on Mars. There are active rovers on Mars. There was a rumor going around that there was, but there's no colony. There's no humans and no children being sent there.
Well, they denied it, so it must be true.
You're right. You're right. You figured it out. That's why these things work so well. Oh my God, it's just crazy. Well,
they were going to deny it. Damn it, it must be true.
Exactly. Exactly.
We got them. Exactly. And then in other news. So how many people in this category that believe this shit? Is in the flat Earth, and we actually did not land on the moon.
Let me tell you, number one, it's a small but growing segment of our population, I believe.
All right, so actually, like this brings me back to a thing at work a couple weeks ago. Yeah, there were two people sitting at the bar debating the legitimacy if the Earth was that the Earth was round.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I am.
All right, I'm going to say it. I said it once before. I'm going to say it again. We're all going to die. I mean like, we didn't even talk about Korea today, but you know, I mean, you know, what the hey, you know? I mean, here you go. I mean, this is the path that we're going, and you know, I don't even know how you debate something like that. Just like, okay, let's pretend on science doesn't exist. All right.
You know, I mean, here, go stay on this wall and jump off and tell me which way you go.
Well, you know, Sean,
the last time I was out in the ocean, I saw one of those big sea monsters on the corner of the map. And that's how I know I was getting too close to the edge.
Yep. Yep. You know, it's funny. Last night I was actually we had a bout and a soccer ball, right? And I was explaining to my kids both the kind of like how the Earth is tilted and how it goes around the sun to account for different seasons and things like this, because they were asking me some questions. And so that's what we did here, right? You know, like lamp soccer ball science experiment, right, to explain it. Meanwhile, you got people kind of wondering if, you know, if you step off the edge of the Earth, you're going to fall into oblivion. I mean, it's crazy. My God. Well, okay, look, so that's the insanity. And you know, I'm glad we got that cleared up to make sure that yes, there is a colony on Mars. So
and
so,
that the earth and that the earth is flat.
And we're all gonna die. So, but okay, so okay, in my my poking around this week too as well, in addition to that thing, which just kind of like, really, are you serious? There are some cool things going on, and one of the things that I don't know, cool, this kind of is disturbing in some ways, as I don't know if you saw this thing about the what's happening in Dubai right now, but they are actually piloting RoboCops. I mean, actually robot police force that will be patrolling the streets of Dubai, right? They're robocars and they have helper drones going along with them to basically patrolling the streets.
So what you're telling me is there's really no reason for Harrisburg police officers to cosplay like RoboCop?
Exactly. That's where I was going with this, actually. I was saying, like, why don't we just go make the full drum and a rope? Why don't we just do that, right? Go here, have the robo cars, and then we can get the big giant robots too as well that are armed to the teeth to patrol our streets. I mean, I just thought it was actually thing. I mean, when I was growing up, I mean, we had kind of the RoboCop movies were coming out and stuff like that, and it was all funny, haha, or kind of, you know, but now here you actually see a very sophisticated deployment of it. And of course, in Dubai, you don't have, you know, protections of a constitutional law and things like this you do here. It's basically the dictate of the king. So they can run roughshod over all sorts of civil liberties, which they do already. And so, you know, we should recognize that this is a techno actually getting tested out in the real world. Some of our worst sci-fi scares are actually kind of, you know, coming to fruition here.
Yeah, I wonder which war contractor from the United States had the contract on that one.
That was actually my first question, right? So I haven't been able to kind of dig too far there. No, seriously, I was like, you know, who's making these things, and you know, and again, why are they choosing there to test it? What went in there? How much are they costing? And what are the plans down the road? So, but hopefully I'm going to be able to find some of this stuff out, Sean, because yes, I'm going to announce it here in our podcast. I actually put in to be a media guy to get media credentials for the first annual SpaceCom in Houston this coming December. So I should be able to report from the horse's mouth
from Mars
what is going to be the development from Mars. Well, actually, I wasn't going to say anything, but the reason why it's in Houston is because they're actually going to launch us to Mars, because they figured out how to fold space and hold conventions there. We'll be on Mars reporting in the Capitol.
Nice. Exactly. Yeah.
No, but so here's the thing. So
are they going to carry you like on a platform with four little like Martian slaves into the conference?
Well, I'm hoping so. I mean, at least that's how they were plugging it. You know, they said, you know, and what was nice, they actually said that, you know, the children will be able to lift us because of the, you know, the gravity is less on Mars.
Okay.
So they'll be able to kind of carry us without too much effort on their part. But, you know, we'll see. We did have to sign waivers. No, I'm just kidding. But for serious, the reason why I'm actually interested in this and actually want to go there, if you recall, you know, as much as Sean loves to poke fun at me, kind of like with my head in the stars, literally, is that, you know, I've been talking about this idea about, you know, galactic capitalism, which we're seeing some of the kind of the worst of the free market neoliberal logic being extended into space. And that stuff actually kind of taking real steps forward. And when I started, you know, this came up in one of my feeds and I started looking more carefully at it. And basically what this is it's in kind of a conference exposition with all these companies and startups and military contractors that are basically, they're going to be both talking about what their plans are and how to do this. But more importantly for me is actually in the expo area, you're having all these companies that are actually kind of attempting to do things like you know, mine the asteroids, and I'm using space for free market, you know, extension of free markets. And that's the kind of stuff that, you know, I will contend that we really need to pay attention to, because one, that is going to have reverberations back here. Right. As these people that have, you know, I'll give you one example, Mark Zuckerberg and I'm forgetting the other guy, but a group of folks are moving forward with this idea, this way of kind of launching nano ships to Alpha Centauri. Alpha Centauri is the closest star. Right. And so they're actually going to be doing this over the next few years, where they're launching these nano ships and experimenting with this. And then you have other groups that are just basically, you know, these individuals, these rich individuals across the globe, willing to sink $100 billion in these experiments, right? So you have this massive consolidation of wealth in the hands of very few. And now they're kind of trying out all these experiments of how to begin kind of mining, you know, kind of, you know, the surrounding galaxy. So if we're looking at how resources are being spent and what our relationship is with space, I mean, in my mind, I want to know from the sources about how these people are thinking about what they're doing. So hopefully I will be in December, early December, I will be in Houston for the first annual SpaceCom and be able to report back from Ragey Chicken.
Nice. Nice.
I know. We don't have our video on today because we're trying to preserve some bandwidth given where I'm broadcasting from. But I know that Sean right now is barely able to contain himself with his like, yeah, whatever.
I do have like a smirk on my face right now. I mean,
of course you do.
This can turn into like you have a nice camera by that point, you know, some really good like high def video, and then just like. You can just upload stuff and turn this into like a almost like a left point of view, like shock doctrine type of thing.
Dude, this is exactly my point. This is what I've been saying, right? The idea is like, look,
and
if you look at the people, no one is reporting on this from the left. If you look at who is actually paying attention to this, it's these kind of futurists, it's Silicon Valley, right? And it's these kind of, it's kind of more of the venture capitalist crowd. I mean, I really think that we need to get our heads around this stuff now. And I know I sound like a nut right now, but I'm serious. So, you know, if I'm going to ever be a media mogul, this is how I'm going to do it. Basically, Ragey Chicken space coverage.
You should you should actually do pen up an article for this and see how it goes online.
I'm actually going to. I'm going to set up, you know, I wasn't going to tell you about this yet because I think one, because I wanted to figure out, but I'm actually going to put a section on the website that's going to be devoted to space coverage. So that's going to be it's going to be my beat.
Ragey Chicken Press, progressive media and space galactic capitalism. And galactic capitalism. Here's this week's story in galactic capitalism. That would be like such a niche coverage thing that like no one else is doing.
Totally. No, and then, like, again, I wish I could say that, like, you know, it was just kind of like a clever idea I dreamed up, but I actually really like this stuff and follow this stuff, and so it's like, you know, and I'm a little, you know, partially embarrassed by it, but not, you know. And I have this image of like, you know, like the astronaut standing on the moon with like a black and red flag, you know.
That should be the covers. That should be like the theme for the page.
I've already been working on it. Oh God. Well, anyway, Sean, I hope you had a good 4th of July at least.
I did. I biked the green belt.
You set yourself a personal record.
Yeah. By like 20 minutes.
Nice.
Yeah. I think that was more because the bike got fixed than anything else.
I put round wheels on this time.
like I had my bike to complete like rehaul, tune up of everything only for like a couple $100, and it rode like a champ, that's for sure. I only had to dismount once. That's when I lost like momentum going up a hill. But yeah. Other than that, like I was able to like push my bike to the points where I haven't been able to do it before on that trail. Which was always nice. And yeah. And then I proceeded to celebrate my 4th of July with other things.
Oh, good.
Afterwards, yep.
Did you actually get to see any of the fireworks while you were celebrating?
I fell asleep between 5 and 9, and the fireworks started at 9. So I got to see, I actually woke up in time to see the fireworks.
Well, there you go. Nothing like a good bike ride, a good celebration, and a good nap, I guess. That's one way to celebrate the 4th. Freedom, man, freedom.
That's right.
All right, man. Well, all right, we're going to wrap this up for today. Again, I want to apologize to folks about some of the quality on the editing of the thing today. We're, again, trying to keep the podcast coming even while I am up in the mountains. So hopefully it's not too horrid. I know there's a couple odd edits, but hopefully you'll put up with us and, we hear back from you. One last plug, if you actually made it this far in the podcast, if you can, you get the chance and you listen to our podcast, say for example, on iTunes, or you listen to our podcast, on Podbean or whatever it might be, please, leave us comments, give us a rating. That stuff helps out enormously in helping us get a broader reach of this podcast. It's a small thing. You know, it doesn't take that long, but it really does help us out a lot. Kicks us up a little bit in the ratings, kicks us up into, in the views and that kind of stuff. But we're always interested in knowing kind of what you think about what we're doing. Give us comments on our Facebook page. We post up all our stuff there. And of course, there's one reminder one more time. If you can, become a member of Raging Chicken Press. You just go to ragingchickenpress.org, click on the support and membership tab, and you'll be on your way. You can also leave a one-time donation there if you want. Thanks to all your support over the years, and especially for those new members who have kind of joined us since we actually started paying our writers in November. Like I said at the beginning, welcome to Justin Schweitzer, our first here at Raging Chicken. You're going to really love his stuff. Anyways, that's going to be doing it for us. So, Sean, hopefully we'll be back with full internet access next week.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, man. Have fun celebrating for the rest of the weekend. And this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. We'll see you next week. Until then, we're out of here.